educate yourself as much as possible, figure out your true authentic needs and your true authentic contribution you can make. And in order to fund that, you need to be funding your own needs. From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Hello, TBM community. It's Amanda Blair, and I'm here to share a tip for your manifestation practice. This tip is all about learning what it feels like to feel your intuition versus fear. It's really important for us to understand the difference between the two because we can get confused on what is leading us, and we want to be sure we're able to tune in so we can find what's aligned. This is very easy. I didn't create this. I read it in a book that I cannot remember the name of, but I love it. It's simple and it's powerful. For this exercise, you'll close your eyes. You'll take three deep breaths. And then when you're ready, you'll imagine something you love, something that you love a lot, that you feel passionately for. When I do this, I imagine pizza. I love pizza. I have a ring that says pizza on it. Love it. Imagine that thing in your mind, and then you're going to say to yourself three times, I love blank. What do you feel when you say you love this thing that you love? And where do you feel it? Remember that. Now, clear that image of what you love from your mind, and you're going to imagine something that you very much dislike, like hate, just grosses you out. Blech. If I was doing this, it would be coffee. Hate the taste, can't stand it. Now I want you to envision that thing in your mind and say to yourself, I love the thing that you hate. What do you feel when you tell yourself the lie? And where do you feel it? Telling yourself the thing you love is going to show you what intuition alignment feels like. The lie is going to show you what fear and lying to yourself feels like. When you get out of that, open your eyes, journal down what you felt and where you felt it, and keep that in your manifestation journal for checking back in when you're facing something that you're unsure of which one is guiding you. Now, if you are wanting more help in figuring out what is aligned for you or moving forward in relationships or work or friends, anything really, I'm your girl. We have a coaching sale going on, $100 off with the code SUMMER100, all caps, code SUMMER100 for $100 off all coaching sessions. You can book as many as you want and out for 3 months. Hope to see you soon and have a great rest of your summer. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Expanded. Jessica here. We have the highly anticipated part two from the How to Create Financial Freedom episode. So if you haven't listened to part one, we really dove into finding your authentic money code, the importance of knowing what lights us up and what we want to be spending our money on. So we have a navigation system of what things are we spending money on out of ego or that aren't aligned, how to take inventory of your spending and see where it might be out of alignment, and then some really practical tips about setting yourself up for financial success. In this episode, we really pull back the curtain and Lacey shares all of the details about how she went on to create her authentic, abundant life and some very specific tips in there. We also have on Grace's mom, Melissa Abbott, who is a financial advisor. She works with Blakely Harbor Advisors and is an investment advisor in Florida. And she gives us some quick tips about people who are just starting out in the markets, where they can go, where they can look, and breaking that all down. One note I just want to make before we jump into this episode, because this is all your practical nitty-gritty investing and sort of like setting up your financial system and foundation. Before jumping into that, I always highly recommend taking a peek back at what blocks might be in the way. This is going to be your expansion to see what's possible, to learn what's possible, different ways that people navigate their finances. But where I really want you to start in this is looking at what ways did money play a role growing up. Again, our Unblock Money course is so, so good in that, especially the childhood and money section. And I would really recommend looking through some of the blocks that may come up if it's scarcity, because you felt as a child that when you didn't have money, the rug was pulled out from underneath you and you always needed more of it for security. That can put you potentially in a lack mindset. Start to look at the ways that you can feel safe now, give yourself the feeling of safety now, and unblock. You can use our unblocking challenge, which is still available in the pathway. You can work through any of the DIs through this, or perhaps maybe you find that what you really craved was freedom to spend on whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted, and having to go in and check in with someone about your spending felt really stifling. Understand why you're being avoidant with your finances. Why does it feel so constricting to look at? And start to unblock the emotions behind that, because then when you take action from that space, it can be super, super aligned. I got a lot of questions about how I moved through lack mentality. And it was exactly that. It's looking at those pieces bit by bit. It's pulling back, dealing with the emotions of the inner child, what they witness. And then it's taking action in real time. It's showing myself, okay, my body feels like it's unsafe to spend money outside of my budget on this vacation, let's say. But I know that I am safe. I can give myself that inner healing to know that I'm safe, and then I can book the vacation, and then voila, I actually am safe. Everything's good. The money is gone. I don't feel stressed about it. I didn't have the rug pulled out from under me. I'm all good. And so it's like creating that trust muscle with yourself. And same on the opposite side. If you're avoiding finances, look at it once a month. See what it feels like. Know that you can say no to that item that really isn't aligned with your authentic money code that you may be just using for soothing or numbing to purchase things. And see how that feels. Try a different decision. That's really how you unblock and expand and take aligned action out of whatever limitation you're feeling there. So hopefully that's helpful. And just a reminder again, this episode is for entertainment purposes only. We are not financial advisors. We are not financial experts. We are certainly not your financial experts. And even though we do have one financial expert that is going to be featured on the podcast, she is not your unique financial advisor. And since everyone's situation with money is very different, and we highly recommend you do your own research before making any decisions with your finances.
And now a word from our partners.
Lacey here, quickly interrupting this episode to chat through Bondcharge, formerly Blue Blocks. As I've said it before prior, they have rebranded, which I totally understand from a business owner standpoint, because their products have far expanded beyond just their blue blocking therapy. Now moving into red light therapy devices, ice therapy, etc. Bond representing good, charge representing energy, which is really, really what their brand is behind. So bravo to the rebrand. I wanted to chat through an item that I love talking about on here. Well, two items, really. We are a strict, as I've mentioned many times, far before we even partnered with Boncharge, we are a very strict, no blue light, past dusk family. I support myself blocking blue light aside from the hour of 12 p.m. every day with their blue light blocking glasses, the daytime and the evening. But my favorite product that I think must be one of their most affordable is their blue light blocking clip light. They have a fantastic alternative version that is bigger and can go on your bedstand, which is the blue light blocking lamp. Love both, but I find myself using the blue light blocking clip most, which I think is such a solid shout out because it's $28.95. But I use it most because, again, our house is mostly candlelight after dusk. And I have to read Teddy books at night before bed. And it was really, really getting challenging just by candlelight. I'm like, how did people do this back in, you know, the 16th, 17th century and prior? And so I use this. I'll just clip it right onto her little books for nighttime reading. And it's really special to watch because you can see her even yawning and tired. So for Teddy to have this protection, obviously we don't do screens with her at all. So she's not seeing any type of blue light and screens. Most of the things in her life are mitigated. It's really, really wonderful to watch that she is a complete circadian rhythm baby. She wakes up with the sunrise and she goes to sleep at the sunset, which in the summer is like 9 o'clock. But it's such a testament to her internal circadian rhythm being so incredibly on point. And I really, really love watching when we're reading at night, her little books. We do three little books every single night while we nurse before she goes to sleep. I clip this on the little book and you can just see her yawning and getting tired. It's not interfering with her natural melatonin uptake. And then she sleeps really peacefully and beautifully through the night. So this is just my hot tip for parents out there who also read at night, who are really wanting to mitigate the blue light in their home that their child or children are receiving beyond just yourself, just to really, really provide that beautiful, deep night of sleep where they're hormonally balanced within our control. Obviously, we only have control within our own homes. To watch that and then also having that deep, deep rest with their natural melatonin cycle so that their body can cleanse and repair as it's meant to do in the evening. So this is just my really favorite thing I like to share with other parents out there. It's the blue light blocking clip light that you just clip right onto any little books you're reading with them. And of course, if they're needing some sort of a nightlight or a lamp by their bed, then I'm all about the blue light blocking lamp to be on their bedside, which is a touch-based lamp. So it's really easy. Teddy actually knows how to do it and plays with it. So, so, so affordable, as well as the blue light blocking clip lamp. And make sure to use the code all caps magnetic, M-A-G-N-E-T-I-C for 15% off any purchase. That's all caps M-A-G-N-E-T-I-C with Boncharge. So this conversation surrounding beekeepers natural is a little overdue in the sense, did anybody get hit as hard as our household this last season? I don't know if it's because I have a new baby and it's their new immune system. There would not be a time that one of us in the house would catch a cold and then it would knock everybody else out like dominoes and all the way down to our co-care person who I think was sick once a month for 5 months straight. And when you have a business and a baby, it means everything just stops. And it was totally insane. And the only things that helped us recover quickly or helped preventative on the two times I personally didn't get sick when Teddy or somebody else in the house did was this regime. I'm going to tell it to you. So a tea that we would make every single time in our household is a huge steeping pot decoction of ginger. And once that's made, we would then put it in a jar and we would put a spoonful of the bee-powered superfood honey in it, which again is so powerful because it has the propolis, the royal jelly, and the bee pollen. So it's just literally a medical grade immune supporting super honey is what we'll call it, with antioxidants and so many minerals, along with some lemon. And once things would turn into a cough, if they did again, if I wasn't sleeping, it would obviously continue. I would do the Be Better cough syrup, especially the nighttime support was huge because that's when it would come up. You know, it's sort of their take on the more allopathic night cold stuff a lot of us probably took growing up because it has that melatonin support and for restful, deep sleep. That's the only way we can all really recover, right? Is that deep, deep rest plus the propolis, plus the elderberry. It was so soothing. For daytime support, they have the Be Better cough syrup, which is with chaga. So that's an immune booster on top of the propolis and elderberry. That was our medicine cabinet. Beyond that, what I do every single day is I take a spoonful of their bee-fueled bee pollen and I put it on top of whatever snack I'm having, may it be coconut yogurt or a piece of toast. I'll put my favorite type of raw almond butter on, along with a tablespoon of the bee-fueled bee pollen. What I love about their bee pollen, I've talked about it so much, I use it daily, and that's why I can't stop talking about it, is that it's a raw source. So it means that it still has all of the vitamins and minerals totally intact in it. It's super fresh. And for me, I don't take a multivitamin. That is my multivitamin every day, is a teaspoon of that. So I swear by it. I did it all through pregnancy and I'm starting to prepare for the next baby. So it's something I do every single day. So today, Beekeepers Naturals is offering you an exclusive offer. You can either go to beekeepersnaturals.com/TBM or enter the code all caps TBM to get 25% off your first order. That's beekeepersnaturals.com/TBM or enter the code TBM. All right, on to the episode.
Okay, so we're going to jump in right in here where Lacey is going to break down, once you understand your authentic money code, you've kind of assessed what's coming in each month, what's going out, where you're spending, are there places you can cut back, are there places that you want to spend more in because it lights you up and brings you joy. After assessing all of that, what is the next step you want to do financially? And then we have a quick tip from Melissa Abbott, who works at Blakely Harbor Advisors as an investment advisor in Florida, who will help give us the nitty-gritty on what type of accounts and things to look for and set up when you are starting off.
Step number one, pay off debt. The next thing that is really, really, really important is then start maxing out your retirement or however much you can contribute. And a lot of people are like, oh God, boring. I'm not going to see that money for so long. Wait, what? What are you talking about? But there's a really beautiful catch depending on the type of retirement that you open. Again, we cannot rave enough about I Will Teach You to Be Rich, Ramit's book. Go back and listen to his episodes to get familiar with him. He literally, in the most layman terms, walks you through this process, along with a lot of other very cool bonus things you can do to also maximize money, like having the right credit cards, et cetera, and the system in place so that you're benefiting off of points to travel, points to eat, you know, and those rewards. But getting back to it, maxing out your retirement, that's like key.
Would you say that before building up a savings or an FE fund or an emergency fund?
I mean, I definitely think having an FU fund and a savings is really important. I think it can be more minimal than a lot of people put the pressure on for it. 3 months of your regular salary or 2 months, you know, enough to know that if anything in your immediate life became a problem or you had an unexpected vet bill or you wanted to leave your job and you needed a month of coasting or 2 months of coasting, I would make it that. Then once you're maxing out your retirement, if you feel like, ah, just to be safe, I want to pad it a little bit more, but I would only do about 2 months, 3 months max of what you need for that. Because most often than not, when you do have some sort of rock bottom, it's not as big as you thought it would be. Tell me if you guys think that's true financially.
I mean, on the retirement front, even in the situation I was in, I always had an automatic payment to go to my retirement account for like $250 a month. So I just got used to seeing that money leave. So even though I wasn't saving my FU fund and I wasn't really meeting my financial goals, I got used to seeing that money leave my account. So I feel like even if you set up $5 transfer every month to like a Roth IRA or something, that's just a tiny bit of a system starting to be set up. And that is money that's going to continue to grow, even if it's only $5. So I wonder if it's figuring out like what the priority is to you. Like if you feel totally desperate, like if you had no money, it would wreck you, then definitely focus on the FU fund before your retirement. But there's also a world where if that's not your scenario, like for me, you know, I feel like I could go get some graphic design clients. So yes, I want to build my FU fund because for me, that's like a huge demonstration in saving. So I want to be able to do that. But if I wasn't in that boat, I feel like I'm someone who might feel more comfortable kind of dual saving the FU fund and the retirement at the same time. So I feel like it's figuring out like your unique situation.
Getting back to the retirement fund, and most importantly, I advise, Ramit advises, most people in finance advise that you do just, it's the most simple thing possible, that you invest your retirement in a target date index fund, which is very simple. It's based on, you know, Vanguard has one, there are a couple, there's American Fund, et cetera. Whoever you have your retirement fund set up through, it's very simple to choose. And then you do nothing. So every time you feed it money monthly, it's automatically being invested, you know, in this very, very diverse portfolio that you don't have to manage or do a thing to. So in fact, rather than, let's say, the savings, which we can talk a little bit more about in a minute, which should be in a high yield savings, which, you know, now that inflation and the interest rates are driving up, you will actually start to see a little bit of a return on that. Nothing will be as great of a return as what your retirement will be, in the sense that, depending on how this year goes, but we can talk about why not to freak out about that. Last couple of years have been really, really powerful in the market. But even through the volatility of the market, most often than not, you usually see around an 8% return on your, you know, let's say the target date index fund. So why the retirement is more powerful than having like a massive savings account is because it's going to make a lot more money throughout the year. It's basically like a really safe savings you can't touch. So it actually ends up being this savings vehicle that makes more money.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting too, because I think how I've set up my savings versus, well, retirement, I've maxed out, but then going into investment pieces, my FU fund and my emergency fund is so big that I'm like, I should just keep going and going. Like, do I need a year, 2 years, 3 years? Like, how much should I have? But I think that's all rooting back to that lack mentality of like, how do I make myself feel safer and more secure? And when you start to reframe it and say, okay, the money just sitting in a very, it's a high yield savings account, but it's not the same return you would get as an investment. So I'm actually not making any money. But if I can release the sort of regulation around it and put that in investment, it can actually make more money and make me more secure.
However, it would astonish you, very successful, wealthy people, how many I know that have such tremendous lack mentality and fear. I mean, we're talking millions of dollars, have never invested, that it's just sitting in a regular savings account. I don't think there is a more problematic thing somebody could do when all of that could be making so much money. May it be in real estate, may it be in ventures, may it be in the market. It should never be sitting. You should have just a couple of months or whatever your goal or intention is within your savings, and everything else should be making money. So we can start to talk about that.
Yes. Okay. Step three, making more money.
Making more money. So I think here's the thing, like Ramit totally feels this way. He totally thinks that the market, even with its wild volatility, if anybody's in the market right now and they don't have a strong trust muscle, they've probably been like, holy shit. If they were in the market during when the pandemic hit, as say, I was mostly cash then, oddly, because I was switching over investments to different things. And so I really, really, really benefited, because the old saying is buy low, sell high. And because of inflation and everybody being so, you know, freaked out about the economy, the market's tanked. It's really tanked. I look at my numbers every month and all I do is go like, oh boy, I cannot wait to start buying again at the bottom of the market. I know I have a very, very, very strong trust muscle though, and I'm extremely diversified in the sense that not only am I really diversified inside the market, and I have a very, you know, diversified portfolio, and we'll talk about that. So if there's anything anybody can learn, even when you're starting from a really small place like I was year one of making just a little bit of money off of manifestation, it was almost 2 years before I brought in any support. And in those 2 years, I started investing very heavily and then have continued. And so basically, the thing somebody has to get clear about, of course, one is going to put into the market. Ramit thinks don't waste your time on other ventures. The market tends most often than not to have the greatest return. However, I think everybody should find their passion. Mine is real estate. I love designing. I love homes. I love architecture. I love small spaces. I just, for me, I can look at real estate and see how I can make money off of it. It's a vehicle side by side with other investments. I have the most money in the market. So find what your thing is and focus on it. So what I mean by that is there's a tremendous amount of opportunity if you are somebody, for instance, who loves real estate. My very first place I bought, again, I've said it on this podcast very transparently, was $290,000. And it was the Forest House. And then just to give perspective for first-time home buyers, obviously things are going to switch a little bit for people because inflation's rising, which means interest rates rising, which is going to make it a little bit more difficult to buy places if you're not buying them cash. But just to give perspective, back then it was 5.4 was my interest rate. And my down payment was $13,000. Then I leveraged it and turned it into an Airbnb. And so within the Airbnb, like just to give perspective, the very first year it grossed $80,000. If we weren't buying all of the parachute sheets and the this and the that, it would have netted a lot more. But for me, I was always looking at it as something I could leverage for profit. And I did. So I think when you're looking at anything in your life you're going to buy or you're going to invest in, have it be a passion, but always look at it first. How can I make money off of this and then take the profit to buy my home? So that's that piece. The second piece is when it comes to the market, it's actually, I think it's either in the last chapter or it's in the second to last chapter of Ramit's book, where he literally gives you the perfect asset allocation. His suggestion, which I actually follow and have a, you know, wonderful person I work with, he even goes on to, within this asset allocation, he gives the very specific funds that he personally invests in. It's so approachable. It's so doable. That's why I would say listen to his book. I think it's chapter, I don't even know, 11 maybe, but it's second to last or last chapter. It's exactly what you would listen to, Jessica. You would go, got it, going to call Vanguard today. I'm going to give them this exact asset allocation. I would advise to do it even closer to the bottom of the market. So you really buy, buy cheap. But actually, in fact, you can start now and just do little by little by little rather than putting like big chunks in at once.
Dollar cost averaging, right? Where you put in the same amount, whether so that way if the market dips or it's super high, if you're putting a stable amount, even if it's $100 every single month towards whatever your investments are, over time, it'll wind up being the same as if you tried to chase a low market.
Exactly.
Welcome, Mel. Just explain a little bit about your background in finance and in that world.
Okay, great. Well, I am an investment advisor representative, which means I work for an investment advisor. So the ideas that I would want to share with you, Jessica, aren't about a specific stock or name, but just the concept of what it means to invest and what it means to do that on a regular basis over time.
Yeah, I think when people first think about investing, it's such a broad spectrum. They're like, does that mean my retirement fund? What is a retirement fund? Does that mean personal investments? Am I just buying Google stock? Am I buying cryptocurrency? Am I buying a house? Am I investing in a company? You know, for someone who's like, okay, I've saved up a bit of money. I know I want to put money towards, you know, even just say your retirement fund to start for a lot of people. But then let's say they have that going. Where would you first direct people? And how would you say that they should make investing sort of a regular practice for stabilizing their finances?
Well, I just to rewind a teeny bit here, I mean, I absolutely think that planning for retirement is a must for everyone. I think people think when they're in their 20s or 30s, it's so far away. So for starters, if you're working for a company that has a company-sponsored 401k plan, you really want to make sure and sign up for that. Usually that's a payroll-deducted contribution that goes into a retirement account for you. And usually you have your choice of a traditional IRA or a Roth. The traditional goes in pre-tax and the Roth after-tax. And this is just an easy way to get started and familiar. I think sometimes people feel like it has to be so much money or they have to have saved up so much to get started. And really, a small contribution, as little as like $25 a paycheck or whatever, if done consistently over time, will compound and grow. Let's say that you're an independent contractor or you're working for a company that doesn't have a plan, then you can invest in your own IRA, and you can do this through so many resources, brokerage houses or whatever. I mean, that's something that you can explore more deeply, but it's an easy thing to do to set up an IRA. Then what you want to do is just set up an automatic payment to come out of your bank account every month. And honestly, you just forget about it. You just let it do its thing. You don't have to really follow the ups and downs of the market because you have a long time horizon, or you're planning a long time horizon.
For something like that, okay, so someone sets up their 401k and they either get it automatically deducted out through their paycheck if they're getting it through work, or let's say they do a Roth IRA on their own or another kind of retirement fund on their own, let's say through a Vanguard. They can put a minimum amount per month in there. Again, you know, once the paycheck goes in their account, get an automatic payment to get it into their Vanguard account, let's say. But then once it's in there, how do you recommend people investing it? Is there more stable things? Are they stock picking? What would be the place to look to start investing? And then also, how frequently? Because you talked about, we talked about before we started recording, dollar cost averaging. So should they be doing that as well in the Roth IRA?
So if they have an employer sponsored plan, then they're going to be under the parameters of that plan. And most of the time, what happens is a company will have a family of funds. And then when you get started, you just pick a fund, and there's, you'll look at the prospectus and you'll look at what the objective of those funds are, and you'll look at your time horizon. Now, what can be pretty popular are targeted date funds, where like you say you're going to retire in 2050 or whatever, there'd be a fund, a 2050 fund. In that case, you're looking at a long time window. And within a retirement account, you're not going to be picking stocks per se. You're just going to be probably in mutual funds. That's one layer of investing. So now let's say that, okay, you have that, you're all set. You're maxing it out. You're getting a company match. You feel pretty good. You've got money going towards your retirement, and that's going in. Now let's say you feel like, okay, well, I have some more funds that I could do something with. So let's just say, you know what? I want to sleep at night. I want to invest my money, but I don't want to be constantly going to my computer and checking every day on specific equity names. In a case like that, you're just going to look again. You can look at mutual funds. If you start out small and you're investing a small amount on a regular basis every month, over time, it evens out. And the stock market, investing in equities, traditionally, it's the best way to beat inflation. And it's a very good opportunity for growth.
So that's kind of at the level where it's like you're not taking large lump sums of money and dumping them all into one, even one stock or one mutual fund. You're putting a little bit in over time. So as the market ebbs and flows, on average, over a longer length of time, you're going to be on the up.
That's right. And as you get more experience, it's not like you don't graduate to the point of you might be working with an investment advisor or a broker or whatever, and they have a recommendation. Or let's say you have a really good feeling about a company or an industry or whatever. You know, honestly, some of the best ideas I get from Grace and Bell because really it's like having your finger on the pulse. I mean, what's happening right now, you know? And this generation is the largest generation, you know, much bigger than the boomers. And what is their interest? What are they buying? What are they interested in? So as you go along and feel more comfortable with it, it can become really fun. And, you know, you can take an interest. And the other thing I was thinking about is, you know, when you're investing, you're having ownership in these companies. And one way to approach it really is to pick things that you believe in and feel good about. You know, these different funds, you look at them, there's a prospectus, it will tell what their objective is, what their holdings are, and then you can say, does this resonate for me? So you can start investing according to what aligns with you.
I love that because that actually makes it feel even better going in to invest because you're thinking about I'm putting money towards companies that I want to see a future in, longevity in, I want to be around, I want them to continue to grow and prosper. And then you're almost like voting with your dollar, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And there's more and more of that. I would say that's definitely trending. And the only way we really do have a voice is it's just kind of like with your dollar, like what are you buying with your dollar? What products, what food line, you know, what clothing, whatever. All of these companies, they have a footprint. People get really engaged in it, as you can imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, okay. That was going to be my other question is where do you recommend people start looking to investigate some of that stuff? So there's Yahoo Finance. Obviously you can like Google out to these companies or search in a web search engine. What about like Robinhood? I know their app, you can search.
You know, everybody has a trusted network. And it might be that you start with finding a firm that you feel comfortable with. And it depends on whether you're going to be completely autonomous in making your own decision or whether you're going to have an advisor helping you. But I would definitely say that the more you can kind of self-educate, the more you can determine a few things about your own objectives. And I had mentioned earlier about your risk tolerance. That's a big one. Because there can be a lot of fluctuation and can they stay the course or is this going to be completely upsetting or whatever? Another thing that, you know, one really needs to consider before they invest outside is what do you have for backup? You want to have some savings. You want to have savings set aside. Your car breaks down or the refrigerator goes or whatever, or something happens with your job. You want to have a cushion before you get going. In saying all these things, I know it can sound really ominous, but it doesn't have to be an all or nothing thing. It can just be a way to start taking some of your dollars and not thinking just of possessions or travel or consumption and saying, okay, I'm earmarking whatever it is, $100 a month. And once you start doing that, particularly if you work for a company that has a plan, you just adjust. That money's not in your paycheck. It's going in there. You just adjust.
And then I guess, is there any other tips for even maybe finding that financial advisor? It can feel like there's like a million different avenues and routes to go in that regard. You know, once someone starts that investing process, where would you have them look, what are some things to look for to know if they're in good alignment, those sorts of things?
I would first start with your own trusted network. Reach out to people that you know, parents, relatives, and, you know, does anybody have a good recommendation? But basically, you know, you just want to do your homework a little bit. What kind of fees does someone charge? I mean, that's really the big one. You also have to find someone who's friendly to a smaller account. And then look at their ideas, and these relationships can easily be moved. It's like if you sign up with one place and you don't like them, you can move at will.
That's really important too, because you don't want to be stuck in a contract with someone if you don't like how they're managing your money.
Right. And I mean, I think also, you know, you have to trust your gut and how you feel, and you want to ask them for their track record, how are their accounts doing, and what is their philosophy? Learn a little bit. A lot of times you want to find someone that you match. It's another situation where you want to find a good match, good synergy. You like what they're doing and you feel comfortable with them.
Okay, so here are my biggest takeaways from our chat then. So I'm hearing definitely if you do not have a retirement fund, you want to look into getting that set up ASAP. The longer you have it, the more compound interest and money you can earn over time. So start with that. Two, make sure you are creating that sort of emergency fund, the FU fund, the cushion fund, putting money into that. And then if you have leftover money, it's like, okay, how can I even put $25 into the market every single month from my paycheck? You know, you don't have to put a lump sum in at once. You can put a little bit in at a time and start playing around with the ways in which you can do that. You know, is it a less risky type of investment like a mutual fund, or are you going all in on one company? What does that look like? And just dip your toe in bit by bit, but make sure you're spending time to research and investigate and start the process, because the sooner you start, the more money you can earn over time.
Absolutely. I think you've got it. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention is for anyone that has kids that are now starting to earn money, as soon as you have a child that's earning money and you can double check on the age requirements, but the sooner somebody starts, the better. I think it's so empowering to start that as early as possible, to feel like, okay, well, this is money I've put aside and this is money I'm directing and this is my energy. And besides that, I even have a little backup.
Yes. I think that's a whole nother episode we can dive into, but like helping educate your kids on financing and the power of money, and knowing that for so long, I think a lot of kids aren't self-reliable on themselves for money until much older, but even knowing in little ways that they can depend on themselves to create money, to open portals, to use it for energy. That's so, so powerful.
Right. Absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you, Mel. This has been so insightful. So many great tips, and I really, really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Jessica. Appreciate it too.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode. the other little piece that I do just want to talk about, getting back to finding what your passion is, Ramit's a wonderful person who will say, in the long run, if you don't really know what you're doing, whatever, stats really show still the market outperforms that. Even when you know what you're doing and you have a dealer and the whatever, he also says the same thing for real estate. He's like, a lot of people's main goal is to buy the house. If you don't care about design and you don't care about your specific thing, here's a checklist to follow. Will you hold on to it for 10 years? If you sell it, all of the profit, will you put that into the market or will you buy another property with that? Because most people just roll it into a bigger house. Whenever I buy anything, I look at it, how can I leverage it to make me money? And when I say make me money, it doesn't mean like, so I can be richer, which is always the goal, is ultimately to grow. However, for me, it all comes down to, how am I not being silly with things? So for instance, a great example, and I can totally out this, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the year, that we really, really want to manifest a totally built out Sprinter van. But I would never, even though I can afford it, I would never go out and buy a built out Sprinter van ever, 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 ever. I would never do that. I have learned through and through and through, your investments pay for the things that you want. That is a rich mindset. That is what that is. That's what a money mindset is. And so I wanted it. I wanted it. And we kept thinking about it. And Max, who also I drug him in to loving real estate and investing in that, he was like, let's get a rental property together in Topanga. And I'm like, wow, Topanga is a lot different than getting a rental property together in Mariposa, even though Mariposa, you know, the market's grown a lot there. However, this is a really good example. So interest rates dropped to zero during the pandemic when we had bought Topanga. It was before the pandemic. Certainly when I bought Mariposa, it was before we had higher interest rates. So we saw the opportunity. We're like, oh, okay, we're going to definitely refinance these homes and take these interest rates to almost nothing, literally to almost zero. So not only did it take our mortgages lower than they were originally, but then you have what's called equity that you've paid into the house or you've fixed it up or whatever. And I'll be really transparent. Within Mariposa, I had $150,000 of equity that I could either just like let sit in that property, or I could follow rich dad, poor dad and do something with it. So a lot of other people who are following societal norms and standards and keeping up with the Joneses would have gone and said, screw it, let's buy a bigger house for ourselves, you know, or let's go out and buy all these silly things. And I said, I'm going to put mine in the market or I'm going to invest in another thing. So Max found us a rental. So I took the Topanga money and came in as an equal partner in Topanga, our, you know, investment property there. So whenever I'm looking for one, this is a great example, I'm always looking for something that could possibly be a two unit. You'll learn a lot about this if you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, your first investment being a duplex, because you can live in one half and make it fancy while everybody else pays for it in the second half. You know, that's how you look at real estate, as not just that cozy, beautiful home you want, because that beautiful home's going to come three or four homes later or X amount of years later. Anyways, looking at Topanga, we looked for something that has a front house and a back house. Front house is going to be a high-end rental that will completely pay for the mortgage right away. Done. So anything we do with the back house now is just purely profit. So an Airbnb on average, an Airbnb in Topanga averages about $10,000 to $15,000 a month. Bam, that's how I get to buy our Sprinter now. That's how I operate. Everything has to be paying for something in our life.
Okay, so when you're saying passive income, there it sounds like in investments, there are money that's sitting in the market and just creating high yield over time. Think your retirement funds, mostly just your retirement funds, or maybe bonds you have to keep in there for a certain amount of time. But then when you're saying let your investments pay for your fancy car, if that's part of your sort of authentic money code, is to have like a luxury car, or let's say it's the dream home, have your investments pay for it. So it's like investing in real estate or other companies where maybe you'll see a return on, or maybe it is within certain stocks that are more short-term stocks, allow that money to come back to you and then use that money then to purchase those other outside things, not taking it from your salary, let's say.
Great way to summarize it. And for the person who is mostly putting their money in the market, usually you're wanting to leave it in for a while. Like that's the goal. not retirement while, but when you're talking to your financial advisor, you're going to talk about your goals. So maybe it's to buy the first property and you're going to leverage what you've saved in your retirement account to do that. Or maybe partial will have to come out of your stocks, you know, your asset allocation. The really important thing that one starts to become savvy with, so I can see every month I have my bookkeeper. She also does everything for me personally. This is something that Remy suggests, that you have eyes at all times on what you're making, what you're spending. So I'm looking every month at like, oh, cut the fat here. This doesn't make sense, et cetera. But the real thing is when you have things like an Airbnb, which I think is like the greatest thing ever given to mankind, it's just such an easy business that you can see profit off of every single month. And then there you go, bam, that's like direct, straight up cash flow that you can pay for your car payment, your whatever things in your life. So this is a really good example of like this Airbnb, or when the Forest House was still an Airbnb, that profit was direct cash flow. So like after the net, that's like directly right then and there, I can either use or use just a small portion, which is exactly how I live my life. I use a very small portion and still live beneath my means to then invest everything over back in.
I think what's made me discouraged about all of this, and not now that I've really decided to clear the deck and commit to like living more frugally for a couple of years to get this set up, but always in the past, I knew that it took a while to grow an investment account, right? I knew it would be like a couple years until I really saw a return, or until I could save enough cash to make a down payment. And it was almost, since it would take so long, I never started doing it because I was like, oh, I'll do that later. That sounds boring right now. Or even listening to you talk, Lacey, it's overwhelming to think, okay, well, if I was at your point, yeah, I get it. But for me, starting at ground zero, or I'm just thinking about the listener who's like, yeah, that all makes sense. And I want to do that, but that seems so far out. How can we recommend that people get started with the expectation that in order to set this up for yourself, you're looking at like a couple year investment of your time and resources to set up a foundation so that you can put these systems in place? You're like committing to a new kind of lifestyle where what you're talking about will be possible down the line, just to mitigate people who are feeling overwhelmed right now. Like, okay, yeah, sounds great, but I have no money.
Yeah, I think the real key piece here is for me, and it still continues to be, living beneath my means has always been very simple for me because I'm somebody who's committed to an end goal. It took me 3 years, and I'll get into this a little bit, 3 years to even build to a point where I saw any type of profit in order to have some sort of cash flow to pay for things. But here's a great example. Like, I lived in the 300 square foot apartment for a year of making somewhat decent money. And then the second year, Max asked me to move in. I told him just straight up, like, if you want to live together, I have a very specific financial goal. I can contribute in these ways, groceries, X, Y, and Z, but I'm not paying rent and this and this and that until I'm at this point financially. My mind has always been sacrifice this in order for like the real cozy spot later on. Always, and continues to be, like, surprisingly, even when you see my lifestyle, I still live tremendously beneath what one who didn't have a lot of financial savvy would be living. It's crazy. The other thing that I really want to talk about that I don't think enough people in finance talk about that I think is really, really savvy, and I think people who have an entrepreneur mindset really appreciate this. Someone who's a full-time employee anywhere, I remember reading a book when I had to pay my first taxes, and they were like nothing back when I was helping people freelance do like copy for Instagram and stuff like that. For a minute, I tried that out. Someone like you, Jessica, who's an employee, people don't realize that there are a lot of opportunities here. So I went out and bought a book, and I can't remember the name of it. I'm sure it's in like a box somewhere. And one of the smart things that it teaches when you are, you know, working, you're an employee because your taxes are already taken out. There are some really cool things you can do. So imaginably, you're claiming zero dependents. But one thing that a financial advisor had told me once is to claim 10. So you get to hold all of your tax money and put it into a high yield savings until so that you're actually profiting off of it all year. So that when it comes time to pay taxes back that you'll owe, you'll have made a profit. That's something that I think is a really big piece if you're responsible enough.
Oh, yeah. I know how to save. So I'm good there.
Yeah, exactly. Only you know if you are. And let's get back to your question for a sec, Grace. Like, let's say, oh my God, Jesus, this is so overwhelming. Remember, I'm 7 years in the making at this point. But let's just say step one, the skill, period, the fallback thing. If you have that, you should be making money off of it. And you can start this process. So if you're at least making like $4,000 a month, let's say $4,000 to $5,000 a month, you're living extremely beneath your means, but you know, like reasonable. You've manifested a very cool, very inexpensive place. You still have the used car and you have your fuck you fund. You're totally out of debt and you're starting to max out your retirement. That's all you're doing at this point. Let's say that you're maxing out your retirement. And let's say you've been doing that for the last 2 years. Now you're at what, 12,000? Let's say it was, what is it? Like 6,000, I think, is one of the base max outs you can do. I think mine's like 13,000. Let's say for the last 2 years, you've maxed out at 6,000. You've filled this retirement and now you have 13,000. Let's just say 12,000. But I'm going to say 13,000 because you've seen a return, you know, because it's in that target index fund. Say you've seen only 6% after taxes and you're whatever. Now you're me in 2018. You have that $13,000 in there from the return you've made and you're buying the forest house. This is your very first purchase you can do. You buy it. So that's the down payment. And you're still making money monthly. So now you've paused on maxing out your other investments and you're only able to spend what you can fix up physically. You're doing a paint job, you're doing this, and you make the place cute and you list on Airbnb. Let's say it's not as high end as the forest house was. So let's say that it's grossed maybe $40,000 for the year and you've net, let's say, $25,000 off of it after, you know, housekeeping fees, which you can already totally like bake into it. But let's say like supplies, you've made $25,000. Now you have that. In the whole time you've been working, still at your one skill set, you're back to maxing out because the Airbnb is running. You're back to maxing out your retirement now. You have this $25,000 you've made because you have an asset, you have an investment that's paying you passive income. Now, what are you going to do with that $25,000? Well, you could go buy the car and the whatever, or you could be smart and you could take that $25,000 and buy another cheap Airbnb, right? And now you're starting to run a couple of them. Do the same thing over the next 3 years. Just think of what 25, 25, 25 profit each year is going to start to look like. Now you're going to really start putting that money into the market. You can see how quickly in 7 years you can build to a place of a very chill passive income.
One thing I just want to point out to everyone too, when you're going through these steps, I know, especially when I was not in the place where I even had investments, but I was just making like my minimal little savings, just making enough to invest in a Roth IRA or an IRA retirement fund, just getting things together. Everything in finance and even just setting up a Roth IRA investment fund may feel overwhelming. A Ramit's book, I'm telling you, is so easy. Just give yourself one chapter, even one chapter a week, one chapter a month, whatever it is, just commit. So easy to do. But then the other piece is, even if you are not at a place where you can be investing just yet, just like Lacey talks about on so many other podcasts, when she didn't have money to invest, she was reading the investment books. Start to familiarize yourself with the vernacular, with the understanding. It can feel like learning a different language. But the more you immerse yourself in it, the time comes when you're ready to put $500 a month into investing or $100 a month into investing. You're like, I know what this means. I've heard that before. I've heard that before. It's not new. It's not overwhelming. So if you're like, oh, I can skip this part, I'm not ready for investing, I would encourage you to explore listening to it, even if it feels like a different language, and trying to decipher, okay, what would that look like for me? Even if you're like, okay, it's kind of going in one ear out the other, then listen to it again when you have, you know, a little bit to put into investing, and things will start to click because you want to see yourself as someone who has the autonomy and freedom to invest in your finances, to invest in your money, to make your own money, to grow your own money. This isn't for like some elite person. Anyone can do this. And that is the key here.
100%. That's why it's like so important to know that both Grace and Jessica are far ahead of where I was at 30 when I started this process.
I know. We should have a finance club and like share one resource per month, if it's like a podcast or a book or a tip or something.
Yeah. And even more than that, you should just follow like the steps. Here's the one person that expanded me. Like you have like a setup where it was like, this is the thing I unblocked. Whoa, I just realized that was my block. Here was my expander. Most importantly, this was the aligned action I took. Here's the one thing I learned. Start that in the community group right away. Like one thread that we just keep sharing on.
Totally. Yeah. And I think what I learned most from my experience is like when you're hitting a wall, look for an alternative route. My default would just be like, take on a new freelance project, make more money. But that would have taken me a lot more time when I could get to the solution by selling my car. And I know that not a lot of people have a car sitting around that they can sell, but what's your version of really getting creative so you can get yourself into a financially sound situation more quickly without just feeling like, oh, I need to get another job or whatever it is. Maybe there's little scrappy things around your life that you can sell or look at in a different way or something like that.
And when you start to do those little things, it will create magnetism. Maybe that magnetism comes in the form of having pings for the next way that you can open an income portal. Maybe it comes in the way of like a gift from a friend to get groceries. Like Grace said, these little things will open up to show you that you're in the way of creating that financial freedom for yourself or creating that self-empowerment with your finances. You don't need someone to do this for you. This is so accessible for you no matter what state you're in. One question I just wanted to take on before we go here. We got this question from the community. It's kind of about feeling this lack mentality during the state of the world. It says, I'm restarting Unblock Money, and I came to the part about generational guilt with money. The module says, where money was tightly held because of outside circumstances that forced people into survival mode. This resonates for me personally as always feeling in survival mode, but not because of a generational lack mentality, but because of the state of the world, the surge of inflation, war, etc. How can this person and anyone else who identifies like this stop feeling like a victim to the circumstances of the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, but this is something I was telling my friend, you know, the other day, who spends a lot of her time politically trying to make a lot of change. And I feel that may it be that you're going to start an NGO or you're going to raise your child more consciously, or you're going to be more conscious, like whatever your intention is, I feel the more financially equipped you are, the more power you have, unfortunately, in the dynamic and the way in which our world is set up. So to make real change or to have the capacity to make change, you have to be out of survival mode most often than not. That in my particular experiencing watching people who are making the biggest shifts in the world, they tend to have a lot of financial freedom that they can give back and contribute and make actual infrastructural changes. So to me, it's like, unfortunately, the world is set up in a very specific way at this moment. I think there's a big tipping point of consciousness happening. However, I do think you kind of have to be in the game to play the game while bringing consciousness to it. That's always been my approach, always. And so in my personal belief is educate yourself as much as possible, figure out your true authentic needs and your true authentic contribution you can make. And in order to fund that, you need to be funding your own needs. So to me, it's like you can't go wrong figuring out your true goals from your authentic code and starting to put one foot in front of the other to empower yourself to really, really, really be able to do things. So if you're falling to guilt over the world, it's the same thing as like, how are you going to help anyone if you don't put your oxygen mask on first? You can sit there and freak out in the plane and help everybody else and everything. But what if you actually have the tools to remain calm, put your oxygen mask on so that you're empowered? So now you can actually save and help people in the plane. And then that's one piece. The second piece that I want to say, just on an energetic front, I talked about this a lot during the pandemic. You can always manifest during any rock bottom, any financial, economical wave that's happening outside. You're always able to manifest. You are always co-creating with the universe. And in fact, it's during the places where you're being pushed to your greatest edge that you're actually just about to manifest so much. The universe is literally like, can you hang? Everything you've been calling in, are you going to crumble right here? Or can you hang with what I'm going to send you? Because you've built up your worth and you've expanded enough to receive it. Can you? That's the magic dark. So usually when these huge economic things are happening, they actually, the energetic of them, oddly enough, just as confusing as a magic dark is what's actually happening, a magic dark on a collective level, oddly enough. So when I look at my investments and with how much I've quote unquote lost, there's nothing in me that's afraid at all. I look at that and I go, buy low, sell high. I can't wait to start buying a lot more at the lowest of the market. So it's like really seeing the opportunity in the magic dark and using the trust muscle.
Okay, so I wanted to give a sort of like a summary of some of these tips and insights. And again, this is all for entertainment purposes. We're not your financial advisor. So take these tips as just as a way of expanding, like, wow, this is what one person is doing with their money. And this is what one person suggests to do. Go out and spend your time researching. And also know, if you do your authentic money code and freedom is on it, or autonomy is on it, or anything where you feel financially unburdened, to build that successful, free life, it's going to take a bit of time. And it's okay to just go step by step through this process. Even showing up and doing step one is going to set you up in such a great pattern for the future. So step one, or piece one, is really think about what skill set that you have that you can start to feel really confident about. That in those moments when you're switching careers, or maybe your finances aren't in a good place and you want to open a portal, what is that one skill set? And maybe you want to spend time bolstering your ability in that skill set that you can get paid to work on in any way, shape, or form. I mean, when I was fresh out of college, that skill set was bartending. I knew no matter what, I could go in and bartend at any place. So think about what your skill set is. Two, start to reframe this idea that your salary at any job is going to be the thing that gives you financial freedom. Know that eventually, in order to have that freedom, it's going to need to come from outside investments and outside places. So start thinking of your salary as a great baseline that's going to feed into other income portals in the future if you're not already there yet. Then the number one thing is to start paying off your debt. Figure out a payment plan, whether it's a little bit a month or whatever, specifically thinking about any high interest debt or credit card debt, where student debt is going to take a little bit longer. So start creating a plan now to figure out how to manage the debt. Two, you're going to simultaneously build up an FU fund, a savings fund. There's great steps in Ramit's book of how to open those accounts. It sounds difficult, but I'm telling you guys, it is so simple. And then set up your retirement fund, a Roth IRA, an IRA, and start figuring out the ability to put in money in there each month. Both of those steps may take you a little bit of time, but even just opening the account. I mean, I did this step by step. Very, very broke it down where I opened a Vanguard account, didn't put any money in, just let it sit just because I needed to like do a step. Then the next month I put money in, still didn't invest it, just let it sit there. Then the third month I was like, okay, I think I have enough knowledge of where I want to invest it. Then I invested it. It doesn't have to be this big sweeping thing. You could truncate it step by step by step. Then once you have those things up and running and doing their thing, you have a good FU fund, you have your debt paid off, you have money going into your Roth IRA, then you can start looking into investing. And if you go back and read through the last few chapters of Ramit's book, you listen to other investment podcasts, you listen to the really debriefed breakdown of what Lacey gave of how she handles her investments and different opportunities for investing, start to expand yourself. What does investing look like? What does it feel like? Get your toes wet. You don't have to jump off the deep end to any of these things. Money, a lot of time, goes hand in hand with security, and it's understandable that people aren't willing to just throw their money at any random thing. So this is a process. It's going to take time, but we really just want to empower you to start on the process, to know that you are worth it, to be putting effort into your finances so you can do whatever you want with them and feel confident with them.
And as I'm listening to all of Lacey's advice and to Jessica's summary, it's hard not to feel discouraged, like I'm so far away from it, or, you know, the 5 years where I actually put in the time to live beneath my means, to set up the stability, to actually acquire an investment. It feels so far away. And it also feels like boring and a bummer and all of those things. But I think if we all stay accountable together and we can make it fun and engaging and support each other, we can all work towards financial growth and stability together. The community group's an awesome resource for this. Out your shadow. Share what your current financial state is and where your goals are and what steps are you taking. That's going to expand everyone so much. Even when I was able to own up to my financial state, that was what led me to the ping of selling my car to ultimately come up with the solution. Had I just stayed hiding in, you know, the reality that I'd created that everything was just fine, I wouldn't be where I am now. And now I'm feeling so much empowerment and so much momentum. I feel the universe sending me a thumbs up. Little things are coming through here and there. I feel the movement just from starting with that one step of outing my money shadow. And money can be such a taboo topic that no one wants to talk about or compare. And I'm not saying go post your salary, but just open up the conversation, and that can be magnetic, starting the conversation around it. And I know with inflation, it's feeling like a scary time, like absurd to pay $7 for gas. We are all feeling it, and we are in the same boat with you. So if you're feeling at rock bottom, if you're feeling discouraged, if you feel like, man, I'll never be able to save the money or invest or whatever, just start with little $5 transfers, $5 a month to your savings, $5 a month to your retirement account. Just starting to create that new habit and that new muscle together, you know, is going to make a big impact in the long run. So don't get discouraged. Stay on top of it. We're here for you. And let's keep communicating about where we are on our money journey.
100%. One of the things that I put on my manifestation list early in 2020 was to set up and take all the action steps in the first half of Ramit's book. That was a manifestation item because I knew I kept procrastinating. I kept putting it off. And then I was like, okay, finally, I'm going to put it on the list. And my tests were at the end of the night when I had plenty of time to dive into a chapter. I'd be like, oh, but I just want to watch an episode of TV, or, oh, I just want to scroll on my phone or whatever. And I started to view those as tests. And when I decided to take the action and actually read the chapter and implement the steps, I would have really kismet manifestations would come through. Like I would get a really good delivery, or someone would reach out about an amazing offer. So just note how you can make this really fun and really actionable.
Another great resource to check out online is Mrs. Dow Jones. She has a really great Finance 101 course that also has a debt payoff calculator. So you download this spreadsheet and you can actually input the numbers of how much debt you have, whether it's credit cards, car, school payments, whatever, what the interest rate is, and help you come up with a plan to pay off your debt in the most strategic way. And then she has a workshop with each module that leads you through like how to set up your savings account and how to do all those steps in Ramit's book, but step by step in a course, which I think is helpful. So I've checked that one out before, but a lot of great resources. Put them in the community group and we'll continue the conversation.
Absolutely. And Grace, last little question for you. I'm a Capricorn, so I like budgets and spreadsheets. Like Mint is my best friend. Mint is a great budgeting app where I keep track of all my expenses. I imagine since you're Aries, you don't love the tracking documents and stuff. Because I'll go in once a month and go through all my transactions and put them in different categories and budgets. What's one tip that you would give someone and how to start, even just start looking at that stuff?
Well, I am actually a spreadsheet master, and I have spreadsheets for literally everything, but my issue is I ignore them. So like I'll set them up, let's say once every other month, I like hit a wall and I'm like, gosh, I need to figure out where everything is and what I owe and how to make a plan. I do that almost every other month and then I just neglect it. And then I come back into the same cycle. Mrs. Dow Jones actually has this tip of giving yourself a money date once a week, like put 20 minutes on the calendar every Sunday and go check in with that spreadsheet. Go look at your credit card statements, you know, see what was I charged for in error? What did I spend the most on this week? Why are my bills so high or low? Or is there any extra money that I can save? So for me, I like to create the system and look at it actually. And I've had spreadsheets for years. It's just that then I become avoidant because I know I'm not doing a good job. I'll just go crazy and spend $1,000 on a new hobby or go on an expensive trip or spend way too much money on groceries. Like for me, it's more that I don't want to stick to the budget. So I ignore it, even though I know what it is. So my tip for myself and for everyone else is like just checking in on a more consistent basis. If you know that you're not going to be able to stick to the budget as like a self-control issue, because for me, it can't just be a once a month check-in. It has to be a once a week, almost every other day kind of thing to keep myself engaged in it. And I'm sure, you know, after I maintain that for a while, it will become a habit. Now I'm almost starting to re-see the value in money. Like I'll go to the store and be like, oh, you know what? I don't really want to spend $25 on that. Whereas before I would just blindly swipe my credit card. So I think sometimes it's like reorienting around the value of money. And also realizing that that's connected to how you value your own worth, your own energy output. Like how much do you think your time and energy is worth? How much do you think your knowledge and your skill set is worth? And are you willing to just throw it away at something overpriced at the grocery store because you're not thinking? So that's kind of how I'm starting to view all of that.
Great, great tip. And honestly, one thing that could help too, there's so many apps for your phone nowadays. If you're someone who has a hard time just going on the computer, setting down whatever, get a budget app on your phone or a Mint app or something like that and do it as a little activity, like switch from Instagram over to the Mint app, check your transactions once a week or once a month or whatever feels attainable to you and see it as like a little exercise, a little game, and just continue to put that into your habits.
Amazing. I'm excited.
Yay! We will have to check in a couple months to see what progress we have all made and where we're at, but sending you all so much love. I know money is such a heavy, tricky, scary topic, but I promise it's not as scary. And just start taking even a little bit of action today. You'll be so magnetic on the other side. Hope you guys enjoyed that episode and got a lot out of it. I know it can feel like a million pieces of information at once. I would sit with it, take it in, and start to create a list of the things that you want to start to implement. So wherever you are in your financial journey, if you're trying to get rid of debt, if you're trying to pare down your expenses, if you're trying to expand out of lack, get really clear about what you want to do, why you want to do it, and start to just take a little bit of action in the next month towards it. Happy manifesting, and we'll see you next week.